This program is sponsored by Dave Stahl.
Power on. Power on.
It's time to take your place on the starting grid and get ready for Racer Radio. Your host, Dave Stahl, about to take you for a white-knuckled lap around the motorsports industry, covering everything from top-notch national drivers and crew chiefs right down to your local kid racers and racetracks. Watch for the apex, because here comes Racer Radio with Dave Stahl.
All right, folks. Hey, welcome to Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The answer.
All right. Welcome. San Diego Carburetor Fuel Injection sponsors this segment. They're at 6622 University Avenue. If it's got a carburetor, fuel injection, or even a distributor, Stan the Man can make that thing get up and do what it's supposed to do. Get you great fuel mileage, win a couple races, and maybe look good at a vintage car show. Now, if you have a BMW, Porsche, or Mini, and you're looking for an alternative to the dealer, Black Forest Motorsports. 40 years in the business, 8066 Engineer Road. Just go to blackforestautomotive.com, blackforestautomotive.com. They'll take care of your vehicle if you just want to make it your daily driver, want to do a little autocrossing, or even vintage racing. They have guys there that have been doing this for more years than I care to admit. All right, without further ado, Peter Starr is in the house. He is a movie producer. He is an author. He's also a DJ back in the day. He used to hang out with some of these guys, see, British guys. We'll have to ask him a few questions here and there on these who these guys are. He wrote an unbelievable book, Take It to the Limits. He's also done a movie of the same title. And if you're into the vintage motocross, I say vintage today because that's what it is today. But, you know, guys like, God, I can't even think of the names of some of these great writers.
Hailwood, Robert. So
pull yourself up to that microphone right there, Peter, and welcome to the show.
Yes,
thank
welcome.
You. Yeah, you can say Marty Smith. You can say Roger DaCosta. You can say David Bailey, Bob Hanna, Darrell Schultz. I mean, all Southern California people for the most part, you know.
Rock
Glover. You know.
Great stories. You got stories out of these guys that are just amazing. You know, how they got to where they've gotten. You know, Marty Smith is probably one of the most, you know, famous of the group. I mean, here's a kid that was making more money than you and I put together at the age of 16, 17?
At the age of 17, he said he made $50,000 when he was still in high school, when he was in high school. And I filmed him at Point Loma High School in 1974.
Cameras at the school. Can you imagine that, Brittany?
And you'd be amazed at what his high school English teacher would say about him in the film.
Do tell.
I can't remember the words, but it was pretty. He said, Marty will go somewhere. And he said, he mentioned something about how much money Marty made. He said, that's more money than I could ever think of.
Well, the other thing, your name to fame, is being a DJ. I know that's not in the book necessarily, or it is.
Well, it's a little bit of the book,
But you got to hang out with bands and artists like...
Well, I came to America in 65, initially to race at Daytona. And after the event at Daytona didn't go to my liking, or anybody else's for that matter, I met a disc jockey at WPDQ in Jacksonville. And
met him in a bar.
In a bar.
Of course.
Victory Bar. And he said, well, can I interview you on the radio? Now, my English accent was much, much thicker in those days, much thicker. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine, you know, sounding like a little bit like Paul McCartney or something like that in Northern England. Anyway, we did the interview and the phones lit up. And this was 1965 when the English bands were very, very big. And they offered me a job. Just like that. WPDQ.
And how old were you?
22. And
how long had you been in the States?
I've been in the States about 5 minutes at that time.
And he gets a job doing a radio DJ.
And because the English thing was so big, they said, we've got other stations they owned. And they shipped me to WRD in Daytona, to WFLA in Tampa, to WKIX in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Wow.
And then I got a call from a guy called George J. in Hollywood.
Oh, boy.
I was looking at on the map. He says, Hollywood was in Florida, right? So I thought, well, no big deal, George J. from Hollywood. Who would have thought? But it was George J. from Hollywood, California. And he was a record promoter. And he said, I want to represent you, at these radio stations. So I'm 22 years old, full of piss and vinegar, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, of course. And during that year, I did shows with the Rolling Stones, and there's a picture of Mick Jagger and myself in the front of my book there.
Wow. Yeah.
Herman's Hermits. And I did some shows with the Dick Clark Traveling Tour, which was Bobby V, Freddie Cannon.
Oh, yeah.
Herman's Hermits, Wayne Fontana and the Mindbenders, Freddie and the Dreamers. Remember those guys?
And how much DJ experience did you have before you sat down in front of a mic and a turntable?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, if I make no bones about it. I mean, as it went on, I improved, obviously.
Well, of course.
In the beginning, I was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
With the right accent, and knowledge of England. And everybody wants to know, what's it like in England?
Right.
You know? So it doesn't matter what, you know, kids would phone up and they'd say, oh, tell me, what's Paul McCartney's favorite color? No, I had no idea, obviously. Well, you know.
But you made up a color.
Of course I did.
As long as you stuck with that same color.
So did that put your motorcycle career to the side?
Yes, very much so. Because for the first time, I could make a lot of money without risking
breaking your neck.
And at that time in the 60s, we weren't making very much money racing motorcycles. Not at all. I mean, you were scratching to make a living.
And they were not safe.
No.
As it was, when you went off one of those, you got hurt.
There was no safety in the leathers. You had one piece of leather, and that was it, basically. And,
if you could afford it.
Yeah. Well, we had leathers. That was in the Grand Prix type racing that I was doing at the time. That was mandatory.
Yeah.
And we had to have a certain standard of helmet you had to have.
But you didn't have the big hump on your back and all the
no
protection.
No air vest, none of that.
No air vest.
No.
So how long were you a DJ?
Well, on and off for about 6 years. It's sort of what I say on and off is because I toured America in 65, ended up in KONO in San Antonio, went back to London and worked on Radio London for a short while, which is a pirate ship, if you recall, and then got an offer to come back to America, and I just jumped at the offer, and I came to work for KTSA in San Antonio. They were the same management had moved over to the other station.
Right.
And then I got a job offer in Vancouver, BC, and I went up there for 4 years. But in the meantime, I was doing record production, and I did a TV show out of Seattle, out of King Television in Seattle. And that was sort of, that went on till about 1970. Then I started producing records, and I worked with Spencer Davis. It was Spencer Davis Group, you might remember.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Weisberg, who was a jazz flute player of some renown, and the Canadian Rock Theater, and a group from San Diego called Sequoia.
Yeah.
Jazz band out of San Diego.
And what did you know about producing records?
I was wondering the same thing, and then he said,
another 5 minutes.
Basically.
He says yes to opportunities.
But I found in my entire life, it's like when I'd never made a movie till I made one.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, you made a movie, so how much experience did you have there?
None.
That's
but
how
no,
you build
but no,
a resume.
Yeah, no is not in your vocabulary.
No.
That's the key.
Well, ask Brittany that.
Yeah.
You know, no is not in my vocabulary.
Yeah, no is not.
I mean, but no, it's. But I believe this my entire life. When I got to make my first movie, which is The Bad Rock, I knew other people that had done it. So when the head of marketing for Hodaka Motorcycle said, we want to make a movie, and I said, I can do that. And all I knew was I knew who to hire to do the things I knew nothing about.
Exactly.
Yes, that's smart.
I brought
move.
Them around, and I learned from those people for the first 3 or 4 movies.
Sure.
And then from that point on, I just said, okay, I know what you're doing now.
Yeah.
And from that point on, we made Take It to the Limit, which is perhaps by many people's estimate, the highlight of my motorcycle movie career.
Well, and the industry as well. You were rewarded for it at a couple of film festivals.
Yep. In 1980, it won the Chicago. It got the Gold Award at the Chicago International Film Festival and took the Silver Award at the Houston International Film Festival.
And this is a motorcycle show. Yep. I mean, it's a motorcycle movie. They don't normally win gold.
It was very different. We had a platinum soundtrack album to start with. We had music by Foreigner, Jean-Luc Ponty, Tangerine Dream, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Arlo Guthrie, who made an appearance in the film.
I love Arlo.
And the reason I'd spent so many years in the music business by that time, putting music and images together, and we're talking about 1976 to 1979, was paramount. I mean, it was very important to me to have the best music and the best to go with the pictures.
Right.
And the music drives the imagery in documentary films. And when you listen to Feels Like the First Time by Foreigner, and you see Barry Sheen and his wife in the movie, it just melts.
Oh, God, you're killing me. All right. We got to take a quick break. Is anybody on for Barona? Barona stepped on it. Guess you get another segment.
Yeah.
Right, unless they call. This is FM 96.1. This is Racer Radio, AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks. Hey, welcome back. You are listening to Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
Hey, you know that music you're hearing right there?
It sounds like a gas can.
There's a guy in Escondido at a repair shop banging on tools, and he made a whole music. Oh, made a whole song.
Oh, I like it.
I thought you would. This segment's brought to you by El Cajon Ford. Where absolutely nobody treats you better than El Cajon Ford. Go to ElCajonMotors.com. For new, used, you name it, El Cajon Ford can take care of it. And for service, guess what? They'll work on every single car in your driveway. That's right. El Cajon Ford. And they support Barona like nobody's business. And with that being said, we've got Dirt Dude on the line. What's up, brother?
What's up, guys?
Hi.
Just sitting here living the dream. What are you up to?
I am elbows deep in a clock that I'm taking apart the oil.
You know it's not going back together. You do know that, don't you?
I just was sitting here listening to your interview, the one before me, and I was so into it. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to call in.
He's still here. I told him that you like riding motorcycles. So
yeah. And if you ever get a chance, you need to look up Taking It to the Limit. Peter, is that video still available to the public?
Well, the Take It to the Limit is from our own website. It's called Moto, M-O-T-O, star, STARR.com.
Okay.
Both of my books are available there and Take It to the Limit. And the first dirt bike film I made was Bad Rock in 1973. That's also available.
So that is available because I will be getting that one as well. So that might be something for you to do there, Dirt Dude.
All right. Put it on the list.
So we're going racing on the 19th?
Still looking good for September 19th and in the works October 3rd and October 17th.
Okay, so no repercussions from last Saturday. Everybody, you guys all got a green light. Nobody came over and yelled and hollered and screamed or smacked you on the wrist?
I haven't heard anything bad. Everything has been good.
Okay.
Everyone's been happy about, you know, the fan count was good, not extreme.
No.
Our count was good. You know, it's just the only drawback was the heat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. I know you and Mother Nature are not best of friends anyway.
It can't possibly be hotter on this upcoming weekend.
I'm thinking next race should be a little better. Hopefully we're in the 80s.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the reason I was asking is because they canceled the antique drags, if you can believe that, out of Barona Drag Strip, which I know has disappointed an awful lot of people. And I would have thought, since the drag strip has been able to do their races, they race Friday night with their high school program, that and then you guys were so successful last Saturday, I was shocked that they would shut it down. But be that as it may, so the schedule,
they've been doing a lot of race legal stuff, and I think that's more local rather than, because I know those antique drags would just attract everybody around.
You know, it's a really good point. I didn't even think of it. Have you ever been to the antique drags, Brittany?
Not sure about that.
Those are the scariest drag cars on the planet.
I went there for the Nitro. I was introduced to Nitro up at Barona.
Well, Nitro is cool, but these antique drags, these are cars with more horsepower and more motor than the car should have. Skinny little front wheels, Fiat bodies.
Okay.
Totally
the
scary.
Skinny front wheels.
Yeah, totally scary.
Okay.
So, well, that's good to know. And as long as Todd's happy and the tribe's happy and, yes, you have your hand up.
Just confirming practice. Is practice still scheduled, Dirt Dude? It says it on the advertisement, but sometimes it changes.
Yeah, the 18th.
Okay, good. Drivers, get out there.
On the 18th, racing on the 19th.
So, nobody talked about that last weekend. How was practice that Friday prior to Saturday?
I didn't get a chance to get up there, but I heard it was pretty good. Not like a huge turnout, but it was good. I think Shane Sexton just picked up a 360 sprint car. He was there for that night of practice. A few of the people showed up for that. I think we're going to have a lot more-ish cars coming for next race, because I heard there's a lot of people that couldn't make it down. A couple people showed up late. They were actually they were living where the Valley Fire was.
Oh, right. So. The fire was a distraction, too.
Slight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is I mean, they had to race home, make sure they could get everyone evacuated, and they came back to the track.
Same divisions running as last time? It looks like it.
Yeah, that's the thing I was going to mention. You know, we've talked about the sport compacts, these B-mod stuff, and it's really kind of on hold right now. We're going to run the Southwestern Lightning Sprints are coming back, Dwarf Cars, their Pony Stocks.
The Pure Stocks really showed up. I think they may have even had a B main or almost thought they might.
They were going to have a B main. They showed up with 22. And Chris is normally the scorekeeper. She wasn't feeling well that day. She actually was transported from the heat. If she would have stayed, we probably would have done a B main. But her daughter Kelsey took over and she's like, if they show up, we'll score them all because. You know, it's kind of a bummer to send two home.
Yeah.
But I think we actually had a couple cars that didn't make it back out for the main event.
Yeah, unfortunately.
We started with like 18 or 19 cars for the main out of the 22.
Wow.
There was a couple of – I saw it on YouTube. The guy over in Turn 2, 7-0X, had videos. There must have been three or four cars that came out of Turn 2 and rode the K-Rail 50-50 down to the other end.
I talked to two of those drivers after the race. Both of them were surprised they landed on all four.
But isn't there a pit entrance right there in the middle?
The exit is right there, and that's super scary.
They hopped it. One hopped it. The other one came down before it. And I think one driver actually did it twice. Wasn't like once. Did it twice, like once in the heat race and once in the main.
He's probably figured, hey, I think I figured something out.
In their defense... Go ahead, sorry.
I guess he found some better traction or better drive off the K-rail out of the corner.
He got more of his money. No, one of them got squeezed out. They were going three wide, and those are already wide cars. So one guy got, really, that was the only room for him was up the wall.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there were sparks coming under from the belly of the car.
Well, yeah, but geez Louise.
Yeah, welcome to stock cars.
There's a few times I've seen a couple cars not fare well after jumping the gap from the pit exit, which is right down the back straightaway.
Yeah,
like I said, there was just lucky that they came across and then they came off the K rail before the track exit. Yeah. So it really was a scary looking thing, but I guess it fared out well for everyone at the end.
Yeah, Kyle Dodd and I once hook bars and we were connected heading right towards it. Just after passing it. Then we hit the wall.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And then what's going on this weekend? Wasn't there nationals or something like that? I know Dan Vernon took off, and I think there's a few guys out racing a national.
Yeah. All over the place. Not just one place, though. Perumph, I think. Joe Frock.
Yeah.
We had on a couple months ago. He unfortunately earned his first DNF. Like in years.
Oh, no.
But he was very nice to the gentleman who won. Tim. I think Tim won. Yeah. Fitzpatrick, who was just on.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of the boys are out. They're heading to a nationals next weekend. Marysville, the final nationals for the Western States Dwarf Cars.
Right.
I heard one of our drivers went out to Boone, Michael Thing.
Oh, how'd he do?
He drove his butt off. Had a couple good nights, but did not make it to the show.
Right.
Oh, Michael Thing's like, what, 16 or something? So he's young.
Yeah, he started like 9th or 10th in his heat race and came in 2nd, which put him into one of the other move-up races. And I guess he's transferred through a couple, but he didn't get a transfer into the main show tonight.
Yeah.
The main show.
Yeah, good experience. It'll teach him. It'll just another mark. Brittany's thinking.
Alyssa Smith, we've talked about in the past. I think she won up at Ventura a week or two ago.
Did she really?
Yeah.
That's a crazy.
Our locals are doing well.
That's a crazy.
We'll call Ventura our local.
Yeah, that, Paris, yeah,
our
you
local.
Could.
They're traveling. I guess everyone's willing to do some traveling to go to keep racing. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Paris is still not open.
But we are.
I know.
Verona is.
That's the main thing.
Get your cars ready, guys.
I heard rumors that they're talking about, Paris is talking about they're going to try and do maybe another race in September, and they're still working on the Oval Nationals, which, God, I'd hope they'd keep the Oval Nationals.
Yeah.
They had them there, as far as I can remember, at least 20 to 25 years they've been racing Oval Nationals.
Yeah, I would hate to see them lose that. I really, really would. And I know Don Kazarian and Scott Delosio are just frothing at the mouth to try to keep that race intact. Because if they have to move the Nationals, it's really hard to get the Nationals to come back.
Yeah, once they find a place, they're going to be like, we'll go here again.
Well, just like Turkey Night. You know, when Turkey Night moves, it's Paris, and now it's not a Paris anymore. No?
Yeah, they were talking about, I guess, the announcer that just passed away was one that was...
Right.
He worked at Paris for the first couple of years before Scott took it over.
Right.
Talking about Bruce Flanders.
Did his stuff at Ascot.
Yeah, it was Bruce Flanders, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to see him go. Did you know him, Peter?
Very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did the voiceover to a movie I did back in 1980 at Laguna Seca called Superbike as a Breed Apart. He was the voice of that.
Yeah, he had a great voice.
Yeah,
he had an awesome voice.
I never got to work with him very much.
It works out better if you have a good voice.
Yeah, you're doing
taking
all right.
Note of that.
You're
there
doing
go,
all that.
Dude.
You're doing okay there, Squeaky.
I do okay. I haven't got Hollywood calling me for voiceover work yet, but yeah.
Yeah, let me know how that goes, will you? Because I'd do it in a heartbeat, but I haven't got that phone call either. But that's okay. It's still tomorrow, right?
Yeah, there's tomorrow. The sun will come up tomorrow.
So what kind of a clock are you working on? Is it a...
It's a mantle clock. I just picked up. I'm trying to figure out the years on it, trying to get some information on it. And I'm just oiling it to make sure it's going to be running good, set the time a little bit, work on the speed of it.
Is it a vintage clock?
Yeah, it's a vintage mantle clock.
Okay, don't get me started. I just picked up 6 vintage radios, the tall ones and the tabletops.
6 of them.
I know. It's another OCD kicking in.
Okay, well.
I'm done with M&M's. I'm done with M&M's. Now I'm going to classic radios.
Wow.
Well, I was at a yard sale. I walked past a yard sale, and they had this clock. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go look at it. And I asked him how much it was. Good deal on it. And she's like, if you're interested in that one, I've got another one. I'm like, okay, I've got at least 10, 15 clocks around my house. So, you know, my family. As soon as I bring one home, they're like, another clock, Dad?
Yeah. So you got OCD. Yeah. So you got OCD too, huh?
Well, not too often you see a house with 2 grandfather clocks in it. I have 2 grandfather clocks, 1 cuckoo clock, probably 5 to 6 mantle clocks, and like 3 or 4 wall clocks.
I just had a conversation about a cuckoo clock last night, and thank God my wife and I both can't stand them.
I love them.
You
this
would.
One I actually have here, my dad bought it for my grandparents when he was in Japan.
That's really?
So a lot of my clocks have history. I have like... my great-grandparents' wedding clocks from both great-grandparents. And then my great-great-grandparents, I have their wedding clock.
Wow.
I have a couple mantle clocks I picked up that were early 1900s.
Wow.
I bought my first grandfather clock before my first kid was born. And then I bought another one after that so my kids can all have a clock and a grandfather clock when they move out in their house.
You want to hear a story about clocks and cars? If you look back to the 60s advertising for Rolls-Royce, the ad was, the loudest thing you can hear in a Rolls-Royce is the ticking of the clock.
That's right. I remember that. Very good. All right, buddy. Hey, thanks a lot. Get back to oiling. If it works, text us.
Hey, Will. I'll send you some pictures. Remember, check us out next Saturday the 19th, September 19th. We'll be out at the track, Facebook, online, RonaSpeedway.com.
Spectators welcome. Races start at 5.
And make sure you bring a mask and you stay socially distanced and behave yourself. And we'll have another exciting race at Barona Speedway. Thanks, buddy.
All right, you guys have a good one.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, AJ Bender is on the line. He's calling in the Paris Auto Speedway segment. So stay tuned. This is FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks, welcome back. You are listening to Racer Radio on FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
The segment's brought to you by Paris Auto Speedway, fastest half mile dirt slash clay track on the West Coast, as far as I'm concerned. You can't beat it. Paris is still fighting hard to get back open, so just stick with their website, stick with their social media, and the folks at Paris Auto Speedway will make you happy. All right, hey, we got AJ Bender on the line. AJ, how you doing, buddy? It's been a while.
Yeah, doing good. I haven't talked to you in a while.
What's up? Flat track?
You
really?
Sound happy.
What's up?
Yeah, I got bored. I was waiting for all the racing to start up, and there was a bike sitting in my buddy's house, and he was like, dude, go for it. So,
wow. You are kidding. You'd never been on one before?
I've been on like little like TTR 125. You know, there's like this little school that I'm an instructor for, and they teach flat track, and but I've never been on a 450. I've never been on a 450 motorcycle,
Ooh.
Period.
Oh, a 450. Boy, that had to be fun, huh?
Oh, man. I was just talking to my buddy on the phone a second ago, and I was like, dude, I was scared to hit all the practices. I was scared to hit the throttle. It kept pushing me back in my seat. I was like, man, I wasn't ready for the power, that's for sure.
Well, you came in third, so something must have worked.
Yeah, I was definitely feeling, every time I got on the track, I definitely felt more comfortable. Sure. You know, like how you gotta ride those things. You gotta slide them in, and yeah. You gotta sit on top of them, and
yeah. Get
the rear end stepped out, which I'm used to that in a car, just different, little different aspect in a bike.
Yes, there's nothing around you if you decide to come all the way around.
You can hear the smile on his face.
Oh, I know. So does that?
Oh, yeah,
so does that mean you're gonna have to make more room in the garage?
It doesn't take up much room, I mean, Dave.
Yeah, I think luckily for me, it was my buddy's bike, and he's got plenty of bikes, and he's just like, anytime you want to ride it.
Perfect.
So, he's pretty much my bike owner.
Don't you hate it when somebody says that to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was about as unprepared as possible. I don't even have motorcycle gear. I didn't have you got to wear a metal shoe, and I didn't have a truck, so... My buddy Jake, I used his truck, I used his gear, I used his boots, his helmet, his bike.
I'm sure fourth place is feeling really good about now.
No, he was in third.
No, because fourth place is like, and he didn't know what he was doing.
Well, yeah, there's nothing to be said for that.
Which track were you at? Did I miss that?
Paris Raceway, which is like a couple miles from the Auto Speedway.
Oh, my gosh, they're open. And
so they're open and the Speedway's not.
Yeah, right. That has to do something with the fairgrounds, I would assume.
Really? Yeah, I think. So, golly. So, let me ask you this. You think maybe you might start flat tracking as well as lightning sprinting it and all the others?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been so bored sitting. I've never spent so many weekends at home, you know, during this whole COVID thing. I was finding any excuse to go to a racetrack, and if it's bikes, it's bikes. If it's
at this point,
go kart if someone lets me.
yeah. At this point, who cares, right? We don't care.
If there's dirt and speed, you say yes.
Yeah. Well, my buddy texted me. I was like, he was asking how it was. I was like, oh, you know me. I just like going in circles, so it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, you should talk. Yeah, don't seem too excited. He'll charge you for it.
I know, right?
I know. You know, because that enthusiasm really can get out of hand. So you really must have been bored. I mean, you threw a wing on your 410 sprint car and raced in Northern Cal?
Yeah, like I said, we were just looking for any reason to go racing, anything we could race. And obviously, all we got is a 410, and they weren't doing any non-wing stuff. And a good friend of ours, Tony Everhart, he has... you know, the whole setup for the wing stuff. And he's like, hey, just come on down, grab the wings and a 50-inch axle and put it in there and go racing. And we did that. That was experience. People always ask me about that now. And I'm like, man, that was nothing like I have ever driven. Well, those cars are so fast.
Is that another first?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we did one practice at Paris, you know, we probably got like 20, 25 laps. And then we went right to the King of the West, which are like the best guys in California that do it, and we made the main. That was the goal.
Well, there you go.
We didn't put a very good show on, but we made the main.
Well, you know, but how cool is that?
He sounds like our in-studio guest. Surround yourself with the right people and then go. Say yes.
Yeah, and no is not in your vocabulary, right? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. We're open for it. And honestly, I was telling my dad, I was loving the wing stuff. The wing stuff is really cool. I hope we do a little bit more of that in the future. But non-wing's definitely home.
Yeah, but what did you see the difference between a wing and a non-wing?
Oh, just how you drive the car. I feel like the wing's kind of a little more forgiving. Like if I kind of get in a bad space, I'm able to save it a lot easier. And
right.
Obviously just getting comfortable with the speed because you're going so much faster. The tires are, you got so much more traction, you know. Your car's going to go where you point it. And just in a sense, it makes it easier. But in another sense, it's a whole different type of driving. Like I would never drive a wing car like I would drive a non-wing car. And
if you wanted to end up over the K-rail, you would.
Yeah, I think the first practice when we went to Hanford in practice, I was just throwing the thing in there and backing it in so hard. And I don't know how many people came up to me and were like, dude, you're not in a non-wing car. You can drive it in straight. I was like, I know, but it's just such a habit to drive in hard and whip the thing in there, you know, and just trying to break those little habits that I've learned.
Yeah, well, at least you're doing it at practice, not doing it in the race.
Yeah, I think I pulled it together a little better for the heat races and the mains and stuff.
So that is so. I am so impressed that you went flat track or speedway or flat track racing, because that is such an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, it was. I was the guy who was bike. His name is Jake Gagne, and I was riding. He called me right before I was talking to you, and he's like, "Dude, so was your heart rate pretty maxed out?" And I was like. Oh yeah, that thing was so. I could feel my heart through the chest just sitting at the line because I do those standstill starts, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, once I got moving, I was fine, but I was. I don't even know. I was probably had a biggest grin ear to ear and a little bit of scaring the crap out of myself.
Yeah,
and a little bit of, this is crazy fun.
Because how many bikes went into the first turn?
Oh, I think that race we had like 8 or 9 start, but I mean it's. It's a whole different thing, you know, when you can just hear all. I mean, in a race car, I get earplugs. I don't hear much, but when you hear one of those, when you hear 450s just ringing out next to you.
And you have a cage, too.
Yeah.
Let's not forget about the whole cage.
Yeah,
in your
there
car
is that
the
safety feature that comes with it.
Yeah, I think that was my wife's big concern. She was
bet.
Like, I don't know if I like watching you without seatbelts.
Yeah. Well, because let's face it. I mean, you're out of control on a flat track motorcycle.
Your wife's probably listening.
Oh yeah.
No, you are hanging on by the skin of your teeth.
Stop scaring her.
Oh yeah. Half the time you're like hanging off the side of the bike, or you're trying to lean back to get traction, and you know the bike's never straight. You're always sideways, and you're always spinning the tire, and it's just like I said, it took a while to get comfortable, and then once I started to feel it, I started getting a little better, and I pulled in the pits, and she's like. I don't know if I like this.
I don't blame her.
Getting faster, and I'm getting nervous.
So I guess the next time I bring you down to San Diego to KUSI, what are you going to bring? I mean, are you going to bring it all?
We can bring it all, yeah. I'm sure Jake wouldn't mind letting me bring that thing over.
Heck no, I'd love to have you down, because right now, with COVID, I can't do car shows. I can't do anything big. Like I just had our guest who's with us today, Peter Starr, who wrote a book called Taking It to the Limits, which is all about the 1970s motocross guys, speedway racers, flat track racers. It's a great book if you like reading. So I had him in today, and I don't know if you've ever heard of Marty Smith.
I heard the name.
Yeah, well, he just passed away, him and his wife, recently, and he's in his book, and we brought one of his replica 250 Elsinore bikes down, which was absolutely beautiful. So I'm more than happy to bring you and the wife and bring the truck down, and we'll put it on a patio, and you can talk all about and gush all over your sponsors, which I'm going to ask you now. So you didn't really have a sponsor for the motorcycle because you were wearing everybody else's stuff.
Yeah, I guess my sponsor would have been Jake Gagne Racing.
Yeah, I guess it was. What about the 410? Who and the wing? Who sponsored you there? The guy that gave you the wing.
Yeah, Tony Everhart. That was fully Tony. And you know, it was a bummer because we just got this brand new race car and a brand new motor right before the season started, and we were so pumped to go showcase it, and never thought our first race would be with a wing on. That's for sure.
Yeah, really. But, so, are you going to go back wing racing?
I mean, if it's the next race that comes up.
Exactly. If it's open and ready, he'll say yes. So, I'm catching on to that. Yeah.
So let me guess. I,
you didn't give the wing back.
No, it's still sitting in our trailer.
No.
It's still sitting there where, you know, he'll have to call us and we'll give it back.
Oh, I know.
You know.
Hey, is that wing on that car, is that adjustable? Can you adjust it while you're driving? Or is it fixed?
So ours is fixed just because we didn't go that far and buy it. Like, but you can buy a wing slider for him, but we just didn't.
And that's just what you need, something else to do in the car, right?
Yeah, you know, we can already adjust our shocks and turn the wheel and add one more thing to it, right?
Sure, why not? Remember, no's not in your vocabulary. Well, AJ, it's always, always a thrill to talk to you. And the offer for KUSI is always open. I would love to get you and your lovely wife down and bring the rig. Maybe if you ever come and race at Barona. You know, I don't know if you ever come down here much, but if you do, let me know ahead of time, and I'll definitely get you on TV.
Yeah, I might be there this weekend, actually. I think I'm going to drive a lightning sprint.
Oh, well, we're going to all be out there. It's too early for TV, but, I'm going to do better than you. I'm going Wednesday to drive to Sonoma to the track up there and drive the new 2020 Ford Shelby 500 Mustang on the track. So.
Oh, wow, I'm jealous. That'll be fun.
I figured you would be, but that's the only way I could make you feel jealous, because I couldn't think of nothing else, because you've done way better than I have. But we will definitely come out to the pits and come by and say hi.
Number. What number do you have?
Yeah, what's your number?
I believe, I'm not sure yet, because there's a couple cars that I could possibly drive, and so it might be either a green 29 or it's going to be a white and red number 41.
I got a feeling I'll find you, because I'll just go to the pits and talk to Salazar's and find out where you're driving. All right, buddy. Always good talking to you. Maybe we'll have you call in next Sunday and give us a fill-in on how it went at Barona.
Right on. Will do.
All right, buddy. You take care. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yeah, you too. Have a good one.
All right, man.
Bye.
All right, folks, this is FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Monkeys live in sidecars. Those are trees with handlebars. Built for fools without a
smoking
doubt.
Joke.
Listen to this song. Cars.
Let it all hang out.
That's from my movie.
I know. That's the kind of guy Brendan is.
My wise old sage said monkeys rarely reach old age. If you want to know what life's about, hold on, turkey, and let it all hang out.
All right, folks. Welcome back to Racer Radio on FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
You know, Brendan, you should get some kind of an award. You're the best. I mean, you just put a smile on Peter's face and could not believe it. Zaxi's in here singing, so don't do that again. So this segment is brought to you. I guess I better talk about the sponsor. Certified Car Clinic. They'll work on anything you've got. Make it go fast, go slow, or even get good gas mileage. Certified Car Clinic has an in-house dyno. So once they do the work, they can test it and give you a report. Check them out. Certified Car Clinic at CertifiedCarCare.net. All right, we got Peter Starr in the house. And that music you're hearing is from...
Take It to the Limit. It's the sidecar sequence. And Let It All Hang Out refers to the monkey in the sidecar. Monkeys live in sidecars. Those are trees with handlebars.
That's right.
I love it. That is like on my bucket list. I want to be a monkey so bad.
Mother.
No, that's the wrong thing to say. You need to be a monkey so good.
Yeah, that's even better.
So, the so bad ones get hurt.
Yeah, that's right. My mother was a monkey in the 40s, if you can believe that craziness. Yeah. She used to ride a sidecar. That was our daily driver. I mean, my dad rode the. It was a Harley, and it had a sidecar, and it had a chipmunk on the front of it.
Oh my gosh!
And I just thought everybody. That's
yeah,
how we all got
that
around.
How we all go to school.
So we got Peter Starr in the house. He has written an unbelievable book. If you like motocross from the 70s, this book will take you down the road as if you're living back in the 70s.
It's not just the 70s. It goes through. Yeah. I made motorcycle movies for 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's basically 73 to 93.
Yeah, there you go. That's even better. And the way you wrote the story, it captivates you. I mean, it's really hard to put the book down. It really is. Once you get going on it, The photos are awesome, and I like the fact I kind of busted somebody the other day that I read a book. They would, under the captions of a couple of these were Grand Prix drivers, they wouldn't mention the number of the car, but they would say the two drivers, but you didn't know which driver was in which car. You at least, when you mentioned somebody, there was something in the caption that would address who they were, so you knew who whether you knew them or not, or if they're wearing a helmet, you couldn't tell.
Yeah.
You know, that was what I liked about the way you wrote the book. You wrote the book in such a way that it puts you in the book.
I like the legend in the back. So to the listeners, when I first got here, they directed me to the back, and it's a bunch of photographs of racers.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple pages later, it's kind of the legend. It tells me who's each.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, because I'm struggling with just a face.
Right.
If I saw the face and the vehicle, it right. would have been easier. So yeah. thanks for legend.
Well, a lot of those people, you know, were unknown to Americans. Basically, like Mick Bottas, who's a sidecar racer.
Right.
George O'Dell, world champion sidecar racer. A lot of Brits. Well, Barry Sheen, you recognize.
Oh, everybody knows Barry Sheen.
Mike Hailwood, you recognize.
Yeah. Everybody but knows Mike Hailwood.
There's people in there that you wouldn't normally know if you're an American. So
right.
that's one of the reasons I did the legend.
Good idea.
The other thing is a lot of people have never seen the faces of some people that wear helmets.
Yeah, I mean, the helmet. And yeah, exactly.
You take the helmet off and they go, who is that?
Exactly.
Yeah, right. You've seen him. You know, Hurley Haywood.
Yes.
So I was riding with Hurley Haywood one time and we got all done. We were having a cocktail party afterwards. I walked right by him.
Yeah,
I didn't even recognize him because he was smiling. Because when he's in a race car, he ain't smiling, you know? Especially when he's riding with some kid like me that probably couldn't drive a nail, let alone a car.
The pest, it was trying to drive him into the corner.
Pretty much.
He's a mean driver, I learned.
Willow Springs, that's yeah. where we was.
You stay in front of him.
So you've got now two books out. Tell me a little bit about the second one.
Well, the second book, it relates a lot to prostate cancer, which I was diagnosed in 2004.
Oh, okay.
And during my course of study, I had no conventional treatment because I thought the odds of me having a byproduct of conventional treatment that I didn't want, i.e. impotence, incontinence, you name it.
Right.
I said, well, before we even think about going down that road, let's try and find out what the disease is about.
So it's not about motorcycles?
No. Well, the book is, yes. But the reason I wrote the book is because I learned early on that people that live a purposeful life live longer.
I agree.
If you're a victim of the disease, you're not going to live as long as people that have a purpose in their life. So my purpose was motorcycles.
Sure.
So what did I do? I drew a map and I said, well, I've not been to this country or this country or this country. And I just picked 12 countries I'd never been to or never ridden a motorcycle in. And I just set about at the rate of two a year going to visit all these countries
really?
And writing about the adventures I had. But the purpose was to continue living a purposeful life
right.
as a way of dealing with that part of what I understood to be natural healing.
Yeah, instead of sitting at home feeling bad about yourself and just watching yourself destruct, yeah. self-destruct internally.
We should do a show about that because there's some video about that you could probably take a look at before. As an example, one of the first rides I did was in Taiwan. And I rode with the group called the Grand Riders. And these were old guys. Average age was 82. Average age 82.
Wow.
Somewhere in their 90s. Who rode around the island of Taiwan. They'd never done that before. And when I saw the video that was produced about them, I literally had tears in my eyes and a lump in my throat.
Yeah.
And I said, I've got to go ride with those guys. Because they were all cancer survivors.
Wow.
They had heart failures. I mean, there were all kinds of aging diseases they had. Yeah. And they basically said, we're going to go ride around our island.
Yeah.
And when I saw the video, it was so empowering.
Yeah.
I said, I've got to go ride with those guys. That was the first of my 12 rides.
No.
And that empowered me then.
So that's what the book is, the travels.
Yes. It's all about the adventures in these different countries.
Oh, my God. I got to get that book.
Wow. Well, it obviously worked.
Yeah,
this
look
was
at
an
you.
06, well,
16
right?
years.
I've been 16 years a survivor of prostate cancer without any
surgery,
treatment.
Without medications,
no drugs, no surgery, no radiation.
That is unbelievable.
And that's basically. But the book isn't about that. The book is about
the travels.
What I found out. But it's the instigation of the traveling was living a purposeful life.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I've been around motorcycling now. This is my 63rd year.
Wow.
That's
riding.
All.
Yeah, he's just a pup.
He just gave me the look.
He's just a pup. Well, yeah. You went probably more than once to an area that's a bucket list for me. And one of these days, I'm going to go, and that's the Isle of Man.
Well, it should be on your bucket list, and you should do it before the bucket
And that bucket ain't going nowhere.
My bucket's kicked.
You know? No, my bucket's doing just fine.
I just brought this up to my dad because I thought, hey, you know, maybe we should take a trip in the next year or two to Isle of Man.
Well, I'm going with you.
Well, but he's like, I don't know if I'm interested because this is what he thinks it'll be like.
No, it's really.
And then you don't see anything for a while.
No, okay.
Keep talking because, Dad, you're listening. I know you're listening.
Well, it's,
Why should we go?
First of all, there was no Isle of Man this year because of COVID.
Correct. Right.
There may or may not be one next year because the way the government is handling this whole COVID business.
Yeah.
But last time I went was, I think, 2012, and I went over there with Stevie Baker, who was America's first road racing world champion.
Right.
And I've known Stevie for 40-some-odd years, and I was doing one of my rides and in Wales, actually, of all places, and Stevie was going to the island to do a demo lap around the island, and so I met him in the island, and I've known so many of the old English racers over the years, and Phil Reed was there, and Kel Carruthers was there, and there was a whole bunch of people that I knew that I could hang out with, as well as Steve, so it was a great moment.
Fun.
But the key thing about the TT, to be quite honest, is you do get guys going zoom, zoom, and by, but it's not quite the feeling that I think your dad put across. Because the entire week that you go there, there's like six major races.
Yeah.
You can move around the island and watch from different places. And it's the atmosphere for the entire week is amazing.
Oh. Well, just the people you meet that are not, you know, in the pubs, in the restaurants.
The whole island, it vibrates.
Yeah, and the whole island totally embraces this race.
Yeah, like-mindedness.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things, if you drive, when you drive around the course itself, it'll have signs for Germans. It says Linksfahren, which means we drive on the left. because during the week, people are out racing around the island and they forget which side of the road they're supposed to be on. And bang, there's
a lot of those, I bet, yeah.
And that's why they have Mad Sunday.
What's Mad Sunday?
Please explain.
Mad Sunday is where they stop all the traffic. Everybody goes in the same direction, but they still kill each other.
Oh,
yeah, I was going to say.
Find a way.
They become racers, and they're really not equipped, and they're not talented, you know, to do that thing.
Yeah.
And I've done Mad Sunday myself, and I've watched guys go flying by me, and I'm going, that's not going to end well.
No.
And
they usually don't.
Often it doesn't.
Well, because that, you know, the Isle of Man, there is no K rails. There's no soft walls.
No, there's just rock walls.
Brick walls.
Telephone poles.
Telephone poles.
And aren't there roundabouts, too?
Yeah.
There aren't?
No, not they miss those. There's no roundabouts. They go around corners, but no roundabouts.
Okay. Yeah, no roundabouts. Oh, please, don't throw a roundabout in there. I hate those things.
I've seen them navigating in a... Okay.
Well, that's not a roundabout.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a hang-on.
A hang-on. That's a hang-on.
All right. Well, Peter, I cannot thank you enough.
Yeah,
you've made my
nice
week. How do people get the book?
MOTOSTARR, motostar.com.
All right, very good.
Motostar.
So, folks, go to motostar.com. Check out the book. It'll be a great gift for anybody in your family that loves motorcycles.
Go back and watch the movie, too.
That, too.
You know,
that's available on the website also.
All right.
Or in Utah. My dad's copy's in Utah. I want to thank you on behalf of everybody. Thank you for sharing and preserving so many great moments that people can resonate with.
And yell at your dad for not being here.
He's listening.
On FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
This program is sponsored by Dave Stahl.